To the Batmobile.
Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lai.
Oh, that sweet, sweet sound of geese honking.
It's honking.
What does it mean, Blake?
It means we are back for another episode of 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks podcast with me, Blake Howard.
And me, Sophie Lai. We're here for your weekly geekly.
For your weekly geekly, folks.
We need to make that a sting.
We can.
Just a little chorus. Wiggly giggly.
And all meetings take place on air.
They really do. I swear.
It's been a pretty big week for geeks.
It's been a massive week for geeks.
We've had near-death experiences.
I know.
We've had a new J-Law movie directed by the guy who directed Hunger Games, but it is not for children.
Yeah, I always remember him as the guy who did... what was it? The one with Rob Pattinson and
Water for Elephants.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Not
I remember
a bad here. Movie. Not a bad movie. Quite good.
It's pretty... all right.
Yeah.
Nothing special.
Sophie gave the biggest face of all time. If that was a face in stars, it would just not even worth an articulated thought. That's good. I'm glad we've started the show. This is where it's a good place to start.
This is where we're at.
Exactly. That's been a big week.
No, it's been massive. So should we start off with our reviews?
Yeah, let's kick it off.
We're looking for a new food critic. Someone who doesn't immediately poo-poo everything he eats.
No, it usually takes a few hours.
It does for Homer, doesn't it?
Oh, bless him. I love Homer so much. Before we get into it, let's listen to the trailer for the movie that we're going to be talking about up first. The big movie of the week that's coming out, Red Sparrow.
Take off your dress. When I was in Moscow, I heard about a program. Young officers trained to seduce and manipulate. To use their bodies. To use everything. Call them sparrows. That's what she is.
And with that, you got J-Law starring as a Russian ballerina named Dominika Egorova. And she's sort of... the premier ballerina in the Moscow Ballet suffers a horrific and a very blatantly viewed horrific accident, and she's left crippled, crippled from doing ballet, but not crippled from living her life. Her and her mother are basically left destitute. That's the way she's made a living, and she gets given a choice. She has a really creepy, very Putin-esque.
I just love everyone's like, what happened to...
Matthias Schoenhardt.
Matthias Schoenhardt. He's suddenly become
the
Putin.
Sexiest man alive from Rust and Bone is also in this movie. Mm. He plays her uncle Vanya, this sort of Putin-esque figure who works in the Russian intelligence community. And he gives her an option. He basically uses her as bait to take out a political enemy and then offers her, because he makes her a complicit witness, a choice. Do you want to die or do you want to become a Red Sparrow? Mm. And... it's really a really brutal take on the possessive nature of like Russian politics, and sort of is in a way a bit of a throwback to spies, you know, evil communists who are keep capturing people and forcing them to do things they don't want to do. But at the same time, It's actually kind of a really intense film that kind of takes, even though the premise might sound slightly sexy, they use these spies who use their buddies to get what they want. It is actually a really kind of disturbing and grotesque look at just what pure manipulation looks like. And also, it's quite entertaining. So, this movie is getting lambasted. People hate it. They're talking about it being, weird sort of fantasy because poor Jennifer Lawrence is sort of taken to whore school, essentially. And that's her character that actually says that line. But I kind of found that the movie very clearly articulates intent. Jennifer Lawrence is being manipulated by bad people, and bad people are using her for their own purposes really badly. And I think that Francis Lawrence, the director, does a really good job of, like, even though it's a movie where she's in the nude, it's not exactly something that is pleasing whatsoever to look
at. No, I love it. She's actually pitched it out to people. It's like, guys, I get my tits out. Like, go see it. It is the least sexiest.
I think I kind of enjoyed it, and enjoyed it for a dark espionage thriller where you finally get to see, people talk about a female James Bond to me, a lot, because I'm a big James Bond fan, and I think if James Bond was a woman, she would be much darker than Red Sparrow, as in she'd probably be more, apt with a weapon. But
there is a lack of training.
but would definitely use this level of manipulation. So I think I had a good time with it as a sort of pulpy thing that it is. What about you, Soph?
I had mixed feelings. Like, watching all the marketing, don't believe the marketing. It is not Black Widow.
It's not Black Widow the movie.
It's not Black Widow the movie. As much as we hoped it would be, it really isn't. So going into it, I was like, oh, very surprised at what it was. But yeah, as you said, it was very dark. They did the manipulation bits beautifully. But I feel for me, like halfway through, it just lost its way a bit.
Yeah.
Like the plot just became really clunky, and there was like no real objective of like whose mission was what. For the whole time, Joel Edgerton is like, he's trying to protect his source. But then it just becomes backstory. It's not even like the main plot point anymore. And I'm like, I don't even know what's the point. Like, I don't see what the big drama is in it, in a way. I don't know if I'm articulating that right.
But it does. This one thing I agree with, Soph. I think what she's trying to say is, like, and this is how I felt a little bit, is that it does lose the sheer pace, because at the beginning of the film, you're introduced to this character. Very quickly, she gets hurt. Very quickly, she's tossed into this program. Very quickly, she's thrown out into the field. And then there is sort of a middle section that loses its momentum. And then very quickly, it closes out. So there is sort of this middle bit where it doesn't execute with the same momentum as it does throughout, but I liked it because I liked it for all the reasons that it's being criticized at the moment, which is that people are saying it's exploitative, people are saying that it's politically dunderheaded, but I actually think I think part of it is they made a really cool an evil program based out of a very real thing, based off a CIA agent, because these programs are actually real.
Of course.
And the sex in what usually is very sexy, an espionage genre, the sex of it and the manipulation is grotesque.
It is awful.
It is grotesque. And I think...
And even when she's like hooking up, what you think is like, oh, finally, they're going to like get feely-feelies. And it's just like, oh, that was the most awkward sex scene I've ever seen.
Very awkward. I've had better sex scenes when I was a teenager. And that was not exciting. So, yeah, look, it's probably not, if you think Francis Lawrence, the director of The Hunger Games, and you think Jennifer Lawrence, this is not a kid's movie. Mm-mm. It is a really dark espionage movie, and it's kind of just, and it just shows you, I guess, the toll. I think that's one fantastic thing for her, Joel Edgerton's performance as well. They really show the toll of what it's like to, A, be responsible for lives, but B, to be reduced to just a possession. And I think that that's really... what I kind of enjoyed about it, because I think she brings real great emotional truth to what that would be like. That's her. That's what she delivers in her performance. But yeah, there's a lot of people that are bashing it.
Yeah, but like, you kind of, this is the thing. I came up the movie and I still didn't have words for it, because I just could not get my head around. Like, it was just the stakes of their missions just didn't feel like it was holy shit. The whole state of Russia and the whole like American CIA are going to go crazy over these things. It just didn't feel like it was there. No. Like, we're on the precipice of nuclear war, like what we are actually happening in real life.
Yeah.
So
filled a little bit lower stakes than
I think that's what it was, like those lower stakes, because I think now it's like, you know, we've got North Korea, we've got Putin now saying, I have nuclear missiles that I can decimate the world with. And you're like,
oh. And all the while, Jennifer Lawrence is having really quick sex.
Bad quick sex. I was like, girl, damn, shit. I feel for you. But yeah, I think that was my issue with it. But apart from that, like, as you mentioned, like, it really does explore that whole manipulation and the psychoanalysis kind of bit really well.
Yeah, some good and very well, beautifully shot. Looks very sleek. Francis Lawrence has done a very good job.
Budapest looks beautiful.
Budapest is divine, and the snowscapes and stuff. It's really lovely. As far as that's like very menacing, good moods. But no, I dug it. I would recommend it. But you're in for a pretty intense, rough going. I think it's a nice alternative. If you're used to seeing espionage movies and you like want something a little bit different out of a spy thriller, I think this is probably something that is very different.
It's grim and dirty. It's not sexy.
No.
It's not sleek. Like, the Russian ballet bits are very beautiful, I will say. But it's like, it's not like the sleek James Bond with the gorgeous CGI where everything's gorgeously choreographed. This is not that.
It is
guttural.
Less Mission Impossible than James Bond, more Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah. Definitely a bit of a Scandi feel to it.
Yeah, Scandi.
There you go.
These porno Scandi bags.
But since we're speaking of leading ladies, shall we move on to the next leading lady?
Let's do it.
Wonder Woman.
So the sequel's ramping up.
It is. Patty Jenkins back on board. Gal Gadot, still there.
Everyone's on board. Patty, we want to give you more money.
More money. You're the only thing keeping the DC film universe alive right now.
Yes, indeed.
But villains. They're chatting villains at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And it's a bit weird because there's like lots of different weird reports. First of all, Sarah Paulson, the incredible performer that Sarah Paulson is, who's probably most people would know from the American crime story, OJ story. She won a stack of awards for that. But she's a terrific character actor in her own right. Recently at the movies in The Post as Ben Bradley, Tom Hanks's wife. And a little while back, this is what the good power of social media is. She was on Twitter and she said, I would love to be in the Wonder Woman sequel and I would love to play Cheetah, which is one of the iconic Wonder Woman villains.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people were instantly speculating, oh, that's a fantastic villain. We should definitely get that. That would be unreal. And this week it ramped up. They were like basically saying, oh, yeah, there's a lot more talk that it is going to be Cheetah. We're hearing leaks, etc. But it's not Sarah Paulson in the driver's seat right now. Right now we have a front runner and it is Miss Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, so late this week, it was revealed that they are very keen on Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
Which I find an interesting choice, like, because she's a comedy performer. Like, we predominantly know from comedy. And Cheetah, not the funniest characters in the Wonder Woman universe.
No, the little I know about Cheetah is not funny. She's very fierce.
Mm.
And so, interesting to see where they're going. But again, at the moment, what's weird, Kristen Wiig may not be playing Cheetah.
Just a villain. Because, yeah, they've been saying villain talks.
They're saying villain talks, but they're not saying Cheetah. So, yeah, it's interesting. There might be, you know, we could have multiple villains. She could be the villain of the piece. But at this minute, it's, you know, Kristen Wiig is, they are desperate for her. They want her. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, Kristen Wiig's a great actor.
Mm.
You know, some terrific films. And she has done, she's not just funny. She does great dramatic and sort of disturbed performances. If you've seen Skeleton Twins, it's amazing. If you haven't seen it, get your life sorted out and do it. I'm interested with this one. I'm going to look at all power to Patty Jenkins, right?
Totally.
Let's just do it. It can't be any worse than Ares at the end of that movie. It really can't.
Seriously, I was like, why is Lupin there? They kept his damn moustache. I just kept on thinking, oh, Lupin from Harry Potter's there.
It would have been much better if he turned into a werewolf and she fought a giant werewolf.
Oh, that would have been epic.
And only if they did sort of American Werewolf in Paris style. None of this other rubbish. But, I'm keen. I'm excited for this one. But at the moment, anyone that they're going to cast is going to be new. So I just want to see him get into production and start, you know, getting a little bit more detail going.
Well, it's got the same release date as Bond 25. November 2019. So wow. Better hurry up.
Hurry up.
But still on Leading Ladies, and this time still staying in the DCU, Batgirl.
Batgirl. And we said goodbye this week. Batgirl said goodbye to Joss Whedon, who went over to the DC camp because he put his hand up to do Batgirl. And look, you might think that it's a bit weird for a dude to put his hand up to do Batgirl, but let's not forget, folks, he pioneered possibly one of the greatest female heroines of all time in television history, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
And so what his influence and the stack of amazing creatives in his village that have all gone off to make other great stuff themselves, you know, people like Marty Noxon, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
They created an amazing character and explored that to a bit. So it felt like this was a good fit.
It was. And then people got a bit iffy with him after his wife's statements came out that he was not the nicest man off screen.
And sleeping with a whole bunch of his cast, potentially.
Yeah, so I feel like that put a lot of people off. I know it definitely put a lot of Whedon fans off.
Yes.
They actually closed down Whedon-esque for a few months.
Yeah, crazy.
It was like, holy shit, this guy who's championed women for so long is actually kind of treating them a bit shit as well. And, like, no one's perfect. But
some pretty dark stuff.
It was dark stuff, and it left quite a bad taste in a few fans' mouths.
I don't blame it, but this is the other thing.
And then when he went to Batgirl, people were like, oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe this might be his redeeming thing. Who knows?
Maybe. But I always, like, I start doing this. When there's a guy out there that's, like, working on a show as the leader with a lot of young women, and they're like, I'm a feminist, I start going, smell suspicious is what I would just say. It's like you see, and this is the terrible example, but you see all these like Christian homosexual haters, and they're like, I hate homosexuals, and then 3 weeks later they're in a brothel having sex with a member of the same sex.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just one of those things where maybe it's cynicism of our age, but like whenever I hear that shit, I'm just kind of like, I'm just gonna put you on the skeptical radar right now.
Yeah, I think everyone just had so much hope that for once,
it wasn't.
Not a skeezy guy that couldn't do women good.
look, he might have treated each of those individual women that he'd had relationships with very nice, but it's also like when you look on it and reflect and you add it as the sum of the parts, you know, unfortunately, we have to talk about things like this on a spectrum now because there have been so many goddamn examples. And look, he might have been a bit of a dirtbag to his wife and, you know,
gaslighting her for 20-odd years.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, judge not lest ye be judged. But, yeah, pretty gnarly. But we've talked too much about Joss, so.
I know.
The good news is here, is that when he departed, people were like, this is a good call.
Who's going to step up? So, bad feminist writer, also World of Wakanda writer, Roxane Gay put her hand up and asked DC on Twitter, I'm interested.
And then the head of DC went back on Twitter. This is the beauty of Twitter.
Oh, so beautiful.
And just went,
Are you serious?
And she said, yes.
Here's my email. We'll chat.
Yeah. So, you know, Joss Whedon famously said when he stepped down that he couldn't find the story. And, you know, more power to Roxane Gay to be in the role. And now it's even evolved further that not only Roxane Gay, as a badass writer in her own right, is getting the chance to champion this, which is just, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Let's, like, let her have a crack at it. If a redheaded old dude can't figure out the Batgirl story and the badass Afro-feminist can, give it to the badass Afro-feminist.
Totally.
So now she's coming on board and she's recommending a star.
Yeah, so she was at A Wrinkle in Time premiere, which is by the amazing Ava DuVernay.
Oh my gosh, can't wait for that.
Where she caught up with Janelle Monáe.
Badass actor and recording artist.
Recording artist, yeah. And Kobe Bryant, I think, believe, was there as well. Where they all started just chilling and hanging and chatting Batgirl.
Yeah, good call. Great call. Janelle Monáe is a terrific actor. She'd be a great Batgirl.
Totally. And the best thing is, the moment she mentioned that they were chatting Batgirl, the fan art came out.
Yeah, fan art is great. Instantly, fans just like, oh, I'm sorry. Do you want me to copy and paste you into Photoshop and sort this out? Yes. So, no, some really good fan art. I'm really excited. Look, I'm excited that they're branching out and just, I genuinely think, and forget about everything in DC, I genuinely think, you know, you look back at the very best that DC has produced, you know, Richard Donner Superman, you know, Tim Burton, the first two Batmans, you look at Chris, you know, later on Chris Nolan getting Batmans and Patty Jenkins. What are all those things? They're really terrific stories told by people who are super passionate about them than auteurs. And look, sometimes the failures happen. You know, you got your Zack Snyder's with Man of Steel and it's a bit of a miss. But I think overwhelmingly, if you lean into people who are super passionate about telling these stories and they're the right people, that's the best way to go. Like, go with an auteur. And that's what's worked for them in the past. And I think that they should just keep doing it. You can't lose if you get the right and diverse creatives who are desperate to tell a story and make something new out of you know, existing character. You can't lose. You just have a crack, and if it doesn't work, you try again.
Totally. And, you know, it seems like Roxane Gay has been hanging with, like, the best of the best. Because guess who else you met this week?
I know. This is such a crowbar for this show. How do we find a way to get to our favorite segment, which is our weekly Watiti?
I'm sorry, I'm not J.J. Abrams. They say, oh, Taika, we wish we called you J.J. Abrams.
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
It's our weekly Waititi. Roxane Gay on Twitter only like mere hours ago that we recorded, she said, I met the incredibly fine director Taika Waititi and his fine lady, and I just want to let you know that he's fine. So even a lesbian feminist thinks he's beautiful. Yep. If that's not the seal of approval on beauty, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and because all this buzz around Batgirl is happening, everyone's like, yo, Taika gonna direct?
Look, I don't think so. There's no way he's going back to another superhero movie. I don't think so. He just seems like a guy, he's going to go his way, and then maybe every 10 years he'll do something big. They would have to pay him such an outlandish amount of money. And I'm just putting it out there. If they want to pay him an outlandish amount of money, please do. Because he'll just finance his next 12 movies off of his own cash.
Totally. But I would watch that in a heartbeat.
I would watch Taika Waititi Batgirl. It would be hilarious.
I know, right?
Yeah. I don't know if Roxane Gay is very biting and satirical in her writing, but I don't necessarily know that Taika's too, with the silliness, like, Taika could make the best Batman 66 remake, like, but I don't know about, like, a sort of hard-hitting Batgirl.
But I don't know, Blake, like, you know, that comic series Batgirl of Burnside, it's pretty cheeky.
Yeah, it is cheeky. It's, this book, if you haven't heard of it, is, it's by Babs Tarr, Brendan Fletcher, and Cameron Stewart, and it's Barbara Gordon. She's ready for a fresh start, and so she crosses the bridge, and she goes to Gotham's, a neighborhood in Gotham called Burnside, and she, you know, decides to become a whole new Batgirl after a freak tries to set her Batgirl costume on fire. So yeah, look, it's got...
And it's a great series. You should definitely check it out if you haven't read it yet.
Yeah, so some good possibilities there. I'm excited about just... Like, I really love great writers who, like, and there's other writers like Ta-Nehisi Coates who wrote the amazing Black Panther run.
And he's now moving on to Captain America.
Captain America, yeah. So, like, I love these random great writers that you see that write all over the place. Ta-Nehisi Coates writes at The Atlantic mostly. And they're just, like, now soliciting jobs on Twitter. I just love it. I love it. Like, God, that's my goal. I would love to be a good enough writer where I could just, like, randomly solicit, hey, DC, I want to write a Batman comic. Maybe 20 years.
Do you reckon our fellow gaggler Maria Lewis could probably do that now that she's a fully fledged genre auteur?
Couple years. I wouldn't put anything past her. No one works harder. No one works harder than she does. So yeah, no, that's the goal, right? That would be amazing.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can't really get off the topic of Roxane Gay because she was at the premiere of A Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
As we mentioned, directed by Ava DuVernay. But off the back of Black Panther Challenge...
Which we loved. Which should exist. You know, I think there's got to be like a more permanent charitable thing like that. How amazing would it be if it's just like, I would pay this stupid amount that you have to pay at the cinema. Like if $5 of that went to like, so like every two people that went, you get one ticket to someone underprivileged who couldn't afford it. Like I'd rather than be in a movie theater watching great art than doing nothing.
But you watch like some of like the reactions that the kids have like gone and done it, and it's just like, if you don't cry, you don't have a damn heart. Is all I'm saying.
Everything.
But I think this is it. It's called Give a Child the Universe. So done by people behind A Wrinkle in Time, where pretty much punters can donate a ticket to disadvantaged kids of color and they can see themselves represented on screen.
Awesome.
So it'll be like for films like A Wrinkle in Time and whatever comes next, I think.
I think it's a great initiative. I would love to just see how it ladders up into something that's consistent, right? Like just to and more widespread. And I'd love to hear about it in Oz too, because it's something that did leak out in the Black Panther, the Black Panther buzz. Started occupying the universe for a brief amount of time, which is awesome. But yeah, you got to keep seeing it. I can't wait.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be great.
It's I love that charitable stuff. It's great. It's awesome social.
But this is why pop culture matters.
Yeah, it does.
We change the freaking world through pop culture. Maybe not through Trump. He's just weird, but
look, the power of like good social enterprise and like supporting companies that do this. Like I think it's only a matter of time before like big movie companies in the States start making this a staple of what they do, the way that they can create this space for kids. And I just think like that's, if you can keep doing that, that's absolutely the best.
Mm. Speaking of kids, one of my favorite movies as a kid, though, Men in Black.
Men in Black.
I was actually so scared in the first film. I like just sat in my mom's lap.
Sugar. Water.
The aliens were scary, and they had cockroaches. But as I grew older, I was like, "This is a great movie."
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's very fun. Barry Sonnenfeld, Steven Spielberg, producing. Will Smith, he was just great. Tommy Lee Jones plays such a great dry.
Yeah. Also, has Will Smith aged since that film?
Not much. He is doing some freaky. Look, Will Smith, let me say, it's set in the same universe, so let's just cover this story. It's set in the same universe as the Men in Black universe that we currently have seen existing, but this is an expansion. The cool news for us, though, Chris Hemsworth, a.k.a. Thor, is being seeked out to play sort of the equivalent of one of those lead Men in Black characters, but set in their London office. So sort of taking, changing the scenery, seeing what happens if we take it over to the UK and Europe. And then not only him, it's not just another white dude. They're looking for some other casting for some people of colour and sort of give it a bit more of a real flavour with some representation there. But, Men in Black, that was, as far as a great series, you got Will Smith at the lead, so pretty incredible.
Yeah, and a talking pug. Frank the pug.
Frank the pug. Bless him.
Bless Frank.
We blame Frank for all the pug paraphernalia that we see. But the really cool thing is, so that's all coming out. And I actually really liked the third Men in Black.
Yeah?
I really did. Yeah, a lot of people. The second one is trash. But the third one's actually quite fun. And I'm keen for it because it's silly. And that suits a Chris Hemsworth down to the ground. You can see him doing that. But what scares me, though, so this is the question. Does this ring an end to Thor? Because, if he's looking for another big movie franchise, does that mean that Thor, as we know him, is toasty?
I think he's just looking for more fun roles, to be honest.
Yeah.
So now that he's finally like, I can stop being serious, Thor. I can just ham it up. And he did it in Ghostbusters as well.
Yeah, he was great.
I feel like he's just seeking more fun comedic roles. And it suits him. All for it. And, if he needs to just chill in Asgard for a while, that's fine.
That's fine.
Because he wasn't in the Avengers movie remember?
Byron Bay, Asgard, yeah.
He was finding a roommate.
the good thing is, we talked about Will Smith just before, if you don't, go to YouTube. You need to subscribe to Will Smith's channel. He is, for some of his terrible movie choices and performances.
Are you talking about Bright?
Yes, I am. If you're talking about that, seriously, he's good. His YouTube channel is amazing. He's just such a light. He's so funny, really charismatic, and he's just a blast. And he's for free, once a week. Top notch.
Would you like to see him as an Uncle Phil in a reboot of The Fresh Prince?
No. I don't want to see any more Fresh Prince, but why not? Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it. A great way to do it if you wanted to refresh it. But I just hate those. I hate those sitcoms. I just hate them. They're just not funny. They're terrible. But it wouldn't surprise me if they refreshed it, because we've got Roseanne coming back, you've got Murphy Brown coming back, and Fresh Prince coming back. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. Moving on now, though, to more animated features.
Yeah.
What's happening in the Disney Pixar world?
Disney Pixar made an incredible Marvel comic in an animation form. It was called Big Hero 6. And it kind of flew under the radar. It's so fun. It's basically Iron Man Jr. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know the premise, it basically has a young kid named Hero, who's sort of a young genius. His older brother, Tadashi, goes to what they call Nerd School in their cool, the coolest amalgamated city name of all time in movies, San Franciscokio,
which is, love it,
which is amazing.
And I'm also just loving seeing Asians on screen.
Yeah, so it's so the set in this sort of weird amalgamation between Tokyo and San Francisco in a sort of semi future. His brother Tadashi is at this school, and Hiro's this sort of young prodigy. He's fighting with robots, etc. Anyway, you see the movie, it's incredible, flies under the radar, and it's begging for a sequel, and it's like, oh, this is great. It doesn't get the sequel at the cinema that we wanted, but airing in Australia from 9:30 a.m. on Saturday on the Disney Channel is Big Hero 6, the series. So they've taken it into sort of an animated series style, and this used to happen with all Disney movies, but I think they're being very selective about which ones they do with it. Mm. But they've taken it to series as just Big Hero 6, the series. So the first couple of episodes I've actually been able to catch, it's called The Return of Baymax, because you would have seen, Baymax Returns. For anyone who's seen the movie, and spoilers, at the end of the movie, it's unclear whether Baymax is going to be around, but we see the potential that he is. And so that's where it kicks off. It literally kicks off. It's got so many of the original cast back. Maya Rudolph, Ryan Potter, who played Hero. Maya Rudolph was his auntie. Scott Adsit is back as Baymax himself. You've got Jamie Chung as Goku, Alan Tudyk as Alistair, and Genesis Rodriguez as Honey Lemon. So you've pretty much got a stack of the principal cast back doing the voices of all the characters. And the first couple of episodes are kind of cool, getting back into that rhythm, finding Hero, finding the city, establishing some potential long-term villains and things like that. But it's just silly and fun. So it's probably not the best indication, because it's just sort of getting the gang back together. Yep. But really fun, and still very kiddie, but at the same time, I love Baymax. There's something so lovely about this big protective hunk of love and hugs, and it's just great. And to have all the full movie voice cast back as well,
which is rare when they move to series. They usually lose most of their cast.
Most of them, and they've got all the big players. So it's a real treat. So it's very stylized. So the movies, that was very that Pixar Disney look. It hasn't quite gone to anime, but it's not quite Disney animation. So they've tried to keep a little bit of the style and the flair of it as well. But it's fun. I'm having a good time with it.
What does your daughter think?
No, she hasn't. She hasn't watched it yet.
She's still in Moana.
dear God. I can thankfully report that we've gone on to some other films. Right now, Secret Life of Pets, she's all over it.
Excellent.
All over Secret Life of Pets. She has gone into Frozen, but I knew it was coming, and it's okay.
You're surviving.
I've accepted it, because I haven't had to, there are probably some people, geeks listening, if you've got young little ones, or maybe a little bit older than mine. She's not two yet, not even one and a half. So if you've got kids that are four or five, you've been punished, and I apologize in advance. But yeah, so sort of going through the Frozen phase, Secret Life of Pets. Just new stuff. It's exciting.
Yeah. And also, Kevin Hart is an angry bunny. Who doesn't want to see that?
It is kind of creepy with Louis C.K. as a puppy dog.
Oh, that is. Yeah. Context.
Speaking of death and or careers nearly dying.
One of our favorites.
Let's hear from the man himself. One of my personal heroes, Kevin Smith.
Hey, man. It's me. And I'm fine. Kinda. I had a heart attack. A massive heart attack. And very nearly died.
Very nearly died.
Yeah, he was shooting a comedy special in Glendale.
Yep.
Did the first one. And that bit of audio is from a 20-minute YouTube video he did from his hospital room. And he talked about just having, he felt he couldn't catch his breath and ended up having a massive heart attack, had one of his major arteries completely blocked and got a stent in his heart. They went up through his groin.
Jeez. I love how he never skimps on detail that.
And he spent a great deal of time talking about how embarrassed he was to A, take off his shirt, and B, have someone shave down there and look at his very small dick, which that's his self-confess. But yeah, look, Kevin Smith really nearly died. But thankfully he's on the mend, and quickly on the mend.
Yeah. He said that Because he was thinking of staying back just to finish the second comedy and then maybe go to the doctor afterwards. And the doctor told him, had you not left and stayed to do the second part, you would be dead, because that was a ridiculously
Yeah, it's a whole massive, artery. Yeah, a whole massive valve. It's just done.
And, like, God, the loss of Kevin Smith.
Look, it's... I mean, I can't even talk about it because Kevin Smith, you know, you have different geek heroes, and I think everyone... Some people like to crap on him as his career's evolved and he's sort of been more exploratory and maybe not as much of a maverick as he sort of started out with. I mean, it's such a curse when you create amazing art early in your career and sometimes that diminishes, or the very anger that made these angry, awkward things that come out at the perfect time doesn't translate when you're like really happy and fulfilled and stuff. And so, you know, like,
yeah, and not broke.
And,
yeah,
you know, you get Kevin Smith, who makes Clerks, who makes Chasing Amy. I mean, Mallrats is a cult hit, but like universally people adore Chasing Amy, Clerks, and Dogma.
Dogma. What a
Dogma
film.
Is an outstanding film. I mean, if you made Clerks in your career, and even Clerks 2 is outstanding. Like, as a filmmaker, he's amazing. As a comic book writer, he wrote some of the best runs of Batman I've read, with Batman Widening Gyre.
Mm-hmm.
The Clerks cartoon is outstanding. And as a podcaster and as an inspiration to just, like, to close the gap between you and your audience, he's an inspiration. And one of my favorite films of, like, the last decade, easily, is Kevin Smith's film Red State. Completely, like, dark and like a Coen Brothers Tarantino version of his comedic sensibility, and people didn't see it or just panned it completely unnecessarily, and it's outstanding. So I have, like, a deep, abiding love. In fact, what a lot of people don't know is I went to New York City, Soph. Mm. I flew to New York City.
Wow.
To the premiere of Red State.
Did you?
Yes, I did. Holy at Carnegie moly. Hall with another 2,500 or 3,000 people or whatever that place takes, just to see that movie, because he was going to be there with the cast. He was there with John Goodman, Melissa Leo, and all the boys. Michael Parks wasn't there. Ralph Garman was there. Fans of the Garmy and fans of Hollywood Babylon. And
oh,
so,
my gosh.
So anyone who does a podcast...
Yep.
You know, he was one of the pioneers, and, you know, he's just, you know, he's an unbelievable dude. And, you know, despite the diminishing quality of some of his later work, which you're like, you know, Yoga Hoses is very meh.
That was for his daughter, though.
Yeah.
He wanted to do something for his daughter.
Yeah, but you see, he's got all of his stuff, no matter what you think of the quality, he does it. The intent is there and the heart is there. He's an inspiration.
And he's been doing heaps on Supergirl as well.
He's Supergirl and The Flash. He's all over it.
And... every episode he's put out, everyone loves.
Yeah. So, you know, so glad, Mr. Kevin Smith, that you are well and that you've recovered so quickly. And
absolutely.
You know, I think sometimes a near-death experience also makes us geeks, after you hear about so many of our heroes that were instantly snuffed away, it's, like, really good to hear that a geek, like, was able to survive. Thank you, modern medicine.
Right. And especially after 2016.
Yeah. And this is a dude, you know, and this is the unfortunate thing. It's not going to be long before we may find out that Kevin Smith legitimately passed away, because the really kind of sad thing he was talking about in the video is, you know, his dad died of a massive heart attack. His mum's had two stents in her heart. He's genetically predisposed to it. So, you know, I just hope that, you know, this is a new, you know, he's already an incredibly prolific person as it is, but, you know, now I think people might just cherish him just that little bit more.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of discovered him in my late teens and went to all his talks at the Opera House, right at the back, because that's all I could afford.
Yeah.
But I just love the way that he could just talk and connect to his audience. Like, even if you hadn't seen his films, he would just talk to you. And, like, it's like, oh, you haven't seen it. I'll tell you a story about what happened and you can laugh about it anyway. And that was the beauty of
it. He's a dream. He is. He's great. And, like...
but it's so personable, and he makes, like, he's only talking to you about these experiences. And when he talks about his experience with Bruce Willis...
that's one of the greatest stories of all time.
Oh, my God.
One of the greatest behind-the-scenes stories of all time. And I actually interviewed him. I have talk to him. And so what I might do, if I can find it, this is how long ago it was. It was like 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
In New York City. I have audio of me talking to Kevin Smith. And I'm like, hi, Mr. Smith. And it's like, it was like my first foray really into podcasts. Was to record an interview with me and him. And I like cherish that memory like nothing else. And so, yes, Mr. Kevin Smith, I'm very glad you're alive. Thank freaking Christ. Thank Buddy Christ, in fact, from Dogma, that you're alive and that you're still going to be out there, because there's a lot of geeks who find such a comfort in you being around.
I need more Silent Bob and Jay Get Old.
Yeah, they're not going to get old. They're not going to get old as much as he was actually said in this video. As if I was thinking about one regret is that I didn't get to make Jay and Silent Bob the reboot movie that he was going to make. And it's like, I definitely want to make it now because I had a near death experience. I'm like, yes, bring it on.
Bring it on. Get the muse. Get everyone back. But we're going to do some quick roundup of the news that's happening. So, oh my God, it's been a massive week. Like, we have not stopped talking.
No, we haven't. This was going to be quick.
So if you're a fan of Terry Pratchett, Discworld is coming.
Is it?
Into a TV series produced by the BBC.
Go BBC. We love that.
So 6 episodes. Should be interesting. Don't know when that's going to be released, but... And it's a long series. It's a really, really long, like, book series.
Yeah. I think there's a whole section of every bookshop
you go
into. I think
it's, like, what, 20 books? Yeah. And he was still writing it when he passed as well, wasn't he?
I think he's still writing it in the future. Like,
writing it up there.
He's still writing Discworld in the sky.
That is happening. And the other big news is Infinity War has been pushed forward.
Yeah, 27th of April around the globe.
Yeah, a bit earlier. I wasn't expecting that. I was hoping just to, like, you know, pace out my movie going. Now I can't.
No, we just briefly, ever so briefly, talked about it before we started recording. It has to be because, you know, Disney this summer or this American summer has an absolute mortgage on all of your money. And it kicks off with Avengers Infinity War. Mm-hmm. It continues with Solo, Star Wars Story, and then bleeds straight into Incredibles 2. So there's they are really stamping their authority on those months. And Infinity War is going to be massive. They're, preparing for Star Wars, Solo, a Star Wars Story to be pretty massive as well. And Incredibles will do very well. Like, you know, Finding Dory was pretty massive at the cinema as well. So they're looking at these three massive movies, and the only other big one that... You know, really, Sophie and I were talking about is probably not competition, more like a complementary, is Deadpool 2, which is going to be coming out as a sort of antidote to Avengers.
On May 17th.
May 17th. So... And that's not even in the Disney portfolio, but it's the sort of another...
Yet. Yet.
Says Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, just, yes, maybe.
And we're going to make it PG.
No!
But, yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were saying, Disney's taking over the world, Blake. Is it still happening?
I don't know, Soph. I think we're all going to wake up and have Disney chips in the back of our head before I know the answer. So,
jeez.
Yeah, it's going to get there. But no one on our shit list this week.
No one's on our shit list. I mean, we kind of did discuss Joss, but that was a while ago.
Yeah. No shit list this week.
No.
And no real... apeshit rants from me.
I know. I am surprised, Blake, because, you know, every time we put up this podcast, I always go, plus bonus rant from Blake. And this week,
I don't know if I've got one.
Come on.
What happened?
Dig deep. Dig deep.
What happened this week that really shat me off? I will moderately rant. Actually, I think I found something.
You found something. Yes. I found something. We are back in business, guys.
I moderately ranted is that early in the year, especially in Australia, like, we haven't really seen many 2018 things.
No.
And so, like, some people are like, what's the best movie you've seen in 2018? There's not been many that we've seen. Like, what have we seen together? Red Sparrow, Black Panther.
Shape of Water.
Shape of Water.
That was last year.
Shape of Water we saw last year. So what's happening is there's this, like, real muddying of, like, there hasn't been much in 2018. You're still in this massive catch-up mode for 2017. And that's actually what I wanted to...
I swear, everyone's still catching up on all the Oscar noms right now. Cause...
What I wanted to moderately rant about is that it's really annoying on the Australian movie calendar because you can't actually distinguish what the freaking hell is 2018 and 17 for at least the first few months. Like, you know, now we got Black Panther, which is lucky, and there's a whole stack of movies, but even stuff that's coming out at the Australian cinema, like The Square and like Happy Ending, which is coming out soon. It's like, they're all stuff that was out last year. So it feels like a bit of a muddied water. And so I was like, what's the best movie of 2018? I'm like, I don't know, Black Panther, I guess, because it's like great and it's probably the best thing we've seen at the beginning of the year. But it's so hard to say what 2018's got to come.
Well, you know what I'm excited for this month? Isle of Dogs. Where's Anderson?
Oh, my God. Talk about some great movies that are coming up. Isle of Dogs looks great. Look, and again, there's still a lot of promise in what's coming out in 2018, but you're still sort of wading through 2017.
Well, we've got 3 weeks till Isle of Dogs.
I know, and it's nearly freaking... It's nearly April. It's March.
It's March now. We officially the end of summer.
Oh, God.
Summer is done for us.
I just really want these Oscars to come and go, and then we can move into 2018 in full
swing. 3 days. Blake, 3 days.
I know.
It'll be over.
I better get my tux ready.
That's right. You have to go and like what?
I have to be on the television.
You'll be the television. So if you ever want to see Blake doing his Oscar wrap up, he'll be on every channel.
Not every channel.
Most channels.
ABC. Most channels. Not all channels.
National broadcaster.
National broadcaster. But what I would really like is, I'm just really tossing up, do I take a bottle of champagne in? If Get Out wins, okay, I'm committing to you, so right now. If Get Out wins, I'm taking a bottle of champagne and a couple of glasses in.
Excellent.
And I'm going to be drinking on air.
Do it. I don't know.
Do you reckon the ABC will let me back in?
Maybe. You're not doing it with the breakfast crew, are you?
No. No. It'll be evening. In the evening, after the Oscars have happened, to debrief on all the glitz, the glam, which I'm not good at, and actually did any of the people who won awards deserve them?
I don't know. Is it going to be 3 billboards wash up?
Oh, you can bet your sweet ass over there. There'll be a fucking rant.
Next week, Oscars rant number 2. Because we've already done an Oscars rant when the noms came out.
There'll be a new rant. You betcha.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, guys.
But, like, till next time, this has been Gaggle of Geeks, 2SER podcast.
Subscribe, rate, review, tell 20,000 of your friends.
I love how this number just keeps jumping by 10,000 people. I'm trying. As my friendship group gets smaller and smaller.
As Sophie and I have less and less people we care about, personally. No, it is weird, right? Because you're like, you promote it to your people in your Twitter stream and your Facebook and stuff and people who, like, you know, you follow each other on socials. And then eventually it's like anyone who's listening, if you dig it, you know, we don't care if it's 1 or 100 or 200, but you just end up people like, how many people listen? I don't know. But as long as you're enjoying, we're having fun, but let us know. That's the thing. If you're having a good time doing this podcast, as much fun as we have talking to you guys, please let us know with rating and reviewing on iTunes. And yeah, we'd love to hear your feedback. And you can find me at Blakey's Batman and Soph at Soph_light on the Twitters.
Or at 2SER.
Yeah.
We are always there. And if you want to hear an abridged version of this show.
Much abridged.
Much abridged. The most abridged. Tune in on Saturday mornings at 11 to 2SER on So Hot Right Now.
So Hot Right Now. Soph hosts a guest on there. She does lots of other stuff. It's not just me ranting.
No, he doesn't rant. He doesn't do any of that.
I'm well behaved.
We stay succinct on the show because I have a time limit and I've got a lot more arty people to speak to.
Yes, way more than me. But you bet your ass it's going to be an Oscar.
Countdown starts now. Anyhow, till then,
bye.